Good evening. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. It's 6 p.m. on Wednesday, September 17th. I'm News Director Catherine Rose, broadcasting live tonight from the Cable House, and you are listening to Raven Radio's live school board candidate forum this evening. I have candidates Paul Ryu and Courtney Amundson in the studio with me, and the third candidate, Lance Ewers, is not here this evening, but I have these two folks with me tonight, excited to talk about some of the issues facing the school board in this upcoming session. So just quickly before we get started, I'll go over some ground rules for our forums here at KCAW. These are forums, not debates, so they're an opportunity to compare your views and opinions on the city. It's a chance for voters to learn who you are and where you stand on key issues. That being said, your time is your own. You can use it how you choose, so you can feel free to address another candidate's stance on an issue during your time. But we ask that folks don't interrupt each other. Raven News has already posed some of our top questions to the candidates, and you can find those on our website at kcaw.org under the Election Hub. So right now, this forum is your chance to ask school board candidates your questions. If you have a question for a school board candidate, you can call us right now at 747-5879, or you can email news at kcaw.org, and reporter Hope McKinney is here ready to take your call or take down your emails and bring them into me in the air room. And we have been getting some questions ahead of time from listeners, and I have a few of those already ready to go. And so let's get started. First, I'd like to give each of you a couple of minutes for opening statements. So I'm going to throw it to Courtney first.
Okay. Hi, I'm Courtney Amundson. I am a 5-year resident of Sitka. I have 3 girls that started kindergarten at Hoots this year. So I think my motivation for running for school board, I think, was as my kids have gotten a little bit older and we've come out of kind of the little kid and COVID era, I'd like to get more engaged in civic duty and civil service and in the community. And so that's really the motivation behind it. And also, I think as my kids progress through school, it's a good opportunity to get more involved and understand it at a broader level than just where I'm at now, which is at Hoots. So that's my primary motivator.
Thanks, Courtney. I'll throw it to you, Paul, for your opening statement.
Sure. Thanks. My name's Paul Ryu. This is one of the rare times that I'm glad I'm alphabetically behind because I didn't have to start. So I'm one of my 30-year resident of Sitka. I have 4 children. 3 of them have all graduated through the system here, and they actually all still live and work in town. I have, my youngest is in 7th grade at Blasey Middle School. And I think you guys know I have some experience with the board. My main draw to it is I realize that it's critically important. And the more I've been involved with the board, the more I realize that how much the board sets the tone for the entire district. That's where my investment lies, is I really see how, having a good functioning board that makes the public feel engaged is so important. And yeah, so that's my motivation.
Well, thank you both for being here to talk more about some of these issues. The first question from our listeners comes from Susie, and it's a funding question. Susie asks, Sitka schools clearly have funding issues. These are improved in the short term by the legislature canceling the governor's veto. But the problem continues to exist in that the school age population is declining. So what would you include in a long-term plan to bring the instruction load into alignment with the number of students? And this is going to go to Paul first.
Yeah, that's a really great question. Especially when we're not really sure of the modeling, it's going to get a little bit more complicated this year because now we have, we've just received the news that we're going to bring in that other Coast Guard boat, finding out what that impact's going to be, and possibly with new staff of the new hospital. So there's going to be a lot of data gathering involved in order to make that decision. And I think it's going to involve some strategic budgeting with, we're going to have to look into the future and say, well, if this happens, if A happens, then B. If B happens, then C. Trying to figure out, because every year we're just guessing at what the numbers are the next year, sort of. But it's been a pretty, I'd be fabricating if I said that it's been pretty stark over the years. It's been a pretty consistent drop off. The demographic of our community is changing, and so the number of kids in the district has dropped by a very significant amount, especially if you trace it back to when the mill closed in the 90s. So in a lot of ways, it's a completely, not a completely different community, but largely different. So thanks.
Courtney?
Yeah, and just, I agree with what Paul said, but just to add to that, I think as numbers have declined, if they continue to decline, if those changes, anticipated boosts in numbers don't happen, we will be faced with difficult choices in terms of trying to make the number of teachers, number of support staff, and the programs that we support fit the number of students that we have. And nobody likes to cut, right? And even coming from a kindergarten standpoint, there's a big kindergarten class this year. And I don't even think they were really fully prepared for how many students they ended up having. And so class sizes are a little bit large. And so they've been dealing with that in terms of, okay, this is a surprise a little bit. So it'd be nice to be able to look at the data, like Paul said, and track that a little bit better and see if we can figure out, run the scenarios and say, okay, we're prepared for each one. What happens if this, what happens if that? And then try and make those decisions as early as we can, even though, you know, kids are coming all the time and moving in and out. So, yeah.
Here's another funding question for you, and this will go to Courtney first. As a member of the Sitka School District School Board, you may be asked to consider cuts that would affect funding for programs. So what would you consider to be the top three most important programs for Sitka School District? And please explain.
Well, I think number one, we have a responsibility to academics, so we need to make sure that students are meeting standards and are prepared for life beyond high school. That would be number one. Number two, I think we need to prepare them in terms of technology and support, making sure that they have skills necessary in addition to just academics that will help them gain jobs. And I think third would be, I'm trying to think what would be a program I could isolate. I want to keep them all, basically, but we can't, right, necessarily, if budgets go down. So I think the third thing would be I support activities, extracurricular, and those that are integrated with the school district. I think they provide a lot of life skills, a lot of soft skills that I think are really important for our students as they develop and learn who they are and go off into the world. I know we can't fund them all, but as much as we can, I think that we should. So those are the three off the cuff, but I know there's other ones that are probably more important.
Sure, thanks. Those are some great observations. I mean, I do think that activities are really important, but I also think that one other element, on top of the academics and technology that I would look at is our mental health supports and our guidance supports. And that seems like it's becoming more and more prevalent as time passes. One of our administrators said recently, Alaska's first in all of the bad things for youth. And what they were referring to is, things that are referred to as ACEs, stress in childhood. We're talking about homelessness and other issues like that. They're not as prevalent in Sitka as they are in some other places in the state, which we're all thankful for, but, they do exist. But even... I've seen it even with students that, come from backgrounds that I guess what people would colloquially say you wouldn't expect to struggle, and we still do struggle. Things are just difficult for people at times. And so really supporting them moving into the future on that's important, and that's difficult to quantify because you can't really see the need very well, it's not like from the board, what the specifics are of any students, when any one particular student struggles. But I do know that when I've listened to what the counselors and what the administrators have had to say over the past few years is that their jobs are getting tougher and tougher because they're supporting kids going through difficult things. That's a hard thing to quantify, and it's a hard thing to know what the need's going to be, but I definitely know that it's really important to a lot of people in the community to keep that aspect. Speaking back to activities, you know, we do get a lot of support throughout our community, and I'd like to throw out a thanks for that. And then, and I find a lot of value in those activities as well, whether it's athletics or there's a lot of team building, and there's a lot of, you know, the social, emotional aspects of learning to work with others and learning to succeed and learning to fail, which is sometimes more important, you know, learning how to fail and then move on and try again. So I think all of those things have a lot of value. Now, how that comes back to the dollars, you know, is a decision that five of us end up having to make, but it's not just the five of us, it's the input of the entire community when it comes time to make those decisions. So, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm going to do one thing or the other, because when it comes time and what the feedback is from the community is going to really play into that. Because if we're not listening to our community, then, you know, we can't exist in a silo or a vacuum.
Thank you both for your responses to that question. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Sitka School Board candidates Courtney Amundson and Paul Ryu, and we're talking about the issues tonight. And this next question is about advocacy, which is playing a much bigger role for the school board maybe than it ever has. This will go to Paul first. Over the last few years, school board members have had to advocate for school funding, both in Juneau and at City Hall. What's your approach to advocacy? How would you make your case to other elected officials who might prioritize public education differently than you do?
Well, when we're talking about, I think that advocacy is a two-way street. It goes, you know, we're going and getting from the community and spreading information about what's happening and getting feedback. But I think the biggest thing is coming in the strongest thing, I think, is data-driven. Coming back and being like, here's our situation, here's what we're working with, and here's where we're expected to be. Well, we're expected to be is, you know, expectations from the state, from the federal government, from our community, like where we're supposed to be moving our students to, and then what the standards are across the state as far as, you know, maybe if we're talking about classroom size or something like that, like where we stand. But I think the thing that has the most power I've experienced when talking to legislators and senators and assembly members is, you know, really being able to know and show what we're working with and to make a really heartfelt but, you know, data-driven ask of like, this is where we want, this is what we have, this is where we want to be, this is what we need to do it.
I agree with that. I just want to expand on it a little bit. I think to be an effective advocate, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, but you don't want to be an ineffective squeaky wheel, right? You don't want to just be annoying. So the best way that I've found to try and be an effective advocate is to be specific in your asks and your objectives. So instead of saying, we need money, won't anyone think of the children? You know, you want to be able to express exactly what you want that money for and what the anticipated outcome is. And then you want to be able to follow up, because a lot of times when you are awarded, you know, a single sum of money or it's a one-off or a couple of years and then it just goes into the machine and then there isn't much feedback into where that money went or how it improved outcomes. So I think a lot of it is just going back to whether it's the legislature or the funding organization saying, hey, this is what we did with your money. This is what came out of it. And this is what we want to do in the future. And so there's always ways to build off that. And I think if you can build those relationships and say, hey, we're a really good steward of that funding and we put it to really good use, can we have some more? then hopefully that builds those relationships and helps improve funding outlooks in the future. Or at least you become a good partner and they can come to you and say, hey, I have a little bit of extra money here. Is there something you can do with it? And if you always have some things in your pocket, you know, at different dollar amounts that you can suggest, as effective ways to use a little bit of money here and there, that sometimes comes into play too. So
thank you both. This next question is a listener question. And this listener wanted to know, what are some of your ideas for recruiting and retaining educators? And this would go to Courtney first.
I wish I was going to Paul first. So Sitka is hard. My sister moved here last year as an educator, and the only reason she was able to come here is because she stays with us. So that's what she was able to find housing. So I know that struggle is very real in terms of being able to find housing. And also, if you bring your family with you, you need to be able to find early, you know, some, you might need early child care. You know, your spouse needs a, or partner needs a income, that sort of thing. So I think the best way that we can do that is, one, to be strong advocates both to the city and the state and say, okay, we have these problems with early childhood education or early child care. We have issues with housing. We need help. And try and work with them on effective solutions to either have affordable housing options or, I don't have a specific way to fix that right now. I wish I did. But also to promote the culture of our school district. Like, we have a very close-knit community that is very positive, and I've seen a lot of educators that are really passionate about what they do and really enjoy their job. And I think that goes a long way. You know, teachers get burnt out, very quickly because it's a very demanding job. And I think to be able to come into a school district and know you have a community and you have support, that can go a long ways to help smooth the edges when you've got other struggles like housing and other ways to acclimate in the community. So I think those are some ways we can try and improve that. And retention-wise, you know, I'm a strong proponent of making sure that we can pay staff and teachers the maximum that we can afford. So I think that if we can continue to try and, I mean, I'm not even sure, we're not even keeping pace with inflation, to be totally honest, but if we can try and advocate for them as well and work that in and figure out, you know, there's always a trade-off, right? And so sometimes you need that feedback from the community to say, okay, what does it cost indirectly to lose teachers to pay, you know, in order to get X, Y, or Z? Because those costs, like losing one teacher, might not seem like a big deal, but there's those ripple effects, right? And there's those indirect effects that make it much more costly. And so I think there needs to be a way for we can effectively communicate the indirect and direct costs of that loss to better advocate for additional funding, and also just to communicate to the community and to the city and to the state to say, hey, this is a big deal. Like, small changes are a big deal to communities like ours. So how can we find more funding to make that happen? So,
Paul?
That's a tough one to follow. She had a lot of really astute stuff there. I would say, yeah, definitely the pay and attracting people here is a big deal. We're lucky because Sitka is attractive to people in general as a community to live in, but with the caveats that, you know, housing's very expensive, although that's pretty fair almost all over Alaska now. So yeah, we've tried very hard to keep pace, and you know, another thing that we do is try to advocate to the state to change the teacher's retirement system. That's been a long-standing thing that, you know, a lot of teachers have left the state, have left Sitka to go teach in other states because they have a more solid retirement program there. I mean, I'm sure there's other reasons as well, but, you know, that's been a real big one. I know in the past some of the strategies that some of the administrators have used is trying to find partner couples that are both work in education so they could both work in the district because Sitka's a lot more affordable if, you know, I think that's small town problems. But as far as what we can do directly, I think one of the biggest things is this becomes an advocacy issue of making sure that we're doing our government to government and expressing to the, you know, expressing to the assembly, this continues to be an issue for us. You know, we've got people that are interested in coming here and working, but they can't find housing. I mean, anyone that goes online at all in town, you know, it seems like multiple times a day there's people trying to find housing in Sitka. It would be great to work any way we can for solutions there. But I think we're so busy on all of our programming that, you know, really kicking that back, but just keeping the need, keeping the awareness of the need up to the folks that have some power to help with some of those more community issues. So, and then as far as retention goes, You know, keeping pay competitive is a big deal, but I think Courtney's comments to the working environment, and a lot of people I know that work in education, they want to do more. You know, they want to learn new skills, and because they keep up and with their education, you know, they don't just stop. A lot of them are working on master's degrees. They're getting new certifications, and people don't see that. You know, you don't see that. You don't go into your child's classroom. They're not doing their homework in the corner. They're doing their job, and they're working on their master's or whatever it is that they're working on before or after school. But opportunities to work with other people and professional development. They want to be able to, you know, I don't want to name any names here, but we've had teachers in the district, you know, that were really into technology, and they went and did, and that saved us during COVID because they, you know, had invested, the district had invested in them to go, and so they went and got skills in technology and brought it back to Sitka and taught all of the folks that were still here. They brought that back to Sitka, and keeping that professional development and innovation available, I think, is a big deal, especially for people that are really wanting it, you know, really people that are really dynamic and want to start new things and really be successful. So
it also helps improve their pay too, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you both for your answer to that question. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, it's 6:22. I'm Catherine Rose, and I'm sitting here with school board candidates Courtney Amundson and Paul Ryu, and this is the Sitka School Board Candidate Forum. It's a chance for you to ask candidates your questions, and we're taking your questions right now. If you call 747-5879 or go online and email us at news@kcaw.org, we'll ask your questions. Pose your questions to the candidates. So this next one is going to go to Paul first, and it's another listener question, and it's, you know, about standardized testing. What are your thoughts on standardized testing and its role in education? What's your philosophy there?
Well, I mean, I suppose my philosophy is I default to the experts. You know, I don't have a background in education. I don't listen to just one person, but there's been some bumps in the road with the state over the past few years because we've gone through a few, I guess I would say, renditions of the Department of Education as governor administrations change, and you know, so we were on the peaks, and you know, now we're on the Alaska Star, and I think we're 4 years into that. I mean, I think it's important because, as I said before, data is important. We need to. In order to understand what we're doing well and what we're doing poorly, we need to have data. We need to be able to measure it. Is it the only thing we should be measuring? No, absolutely not. You know, there's so many other outcomes. But I can tell you it's a personal story. My son was in sixth grade last year, and I remember him coming home, and he was like, "Dad, I took the maps." And he's like, "Look," he was like, "I was flat for, you know, these last two times," and he's like, "and I raised it 12 points this time," and I just about fell out of my chair. It shocked me, kind of, that he cared, you know, I was surprised because it was a win for him. He realized that, you know, he had put an effort, and then saw gains from that. So that was an unexpected to me. I mean, I remember taking standardized testing. I'm sure we all did as a kid, and like, maybe you guys were, you know, more in touch with it than I was, but, you know, I don't remember it really making a difference in my, you know, in my schooling career, that I didn't feel like it was connected to the work that I was doing. And I can see that that has changed, that he specifically saw that he had learned new skills. So I think I saw a lot of value there. And then certainly as they do the MAPS testing throughout the year, I know that the teachers adjust programming and what's going on with individual students based, because it really lets them know, you know, is the student absorbing the things that they're supposed to be absorbing? And maybe the issue is absenteeism or something else if they're not, but it allows them to adjust throughout the year. And I know that the teachers and administrators have said that it's a valuable tool, that they're actually able to use that data for the best outcomes. So I think it's not so much the test, it's the outcome that matters. So whatever tools that they need to get those outcomes, I support.
Thanks. Pass it to Courtney.
Yeah, so I generally agree with that. I think there's two ways that standardized testing data can be useful. One is for the student, like, as a kid, I don't remember even getting the results back. It just, like, went off into the ether. You know, it wasn't, certainly wasn't used to help me identify areas where I needed to grow, I don't think. So I'm glad that that's happening now, and that I can help students track their progress. I don't think they're the end-all, be-all for students in terms of you're a success if you get, you know, a score of this or a score of that. I don't think that should be the end-all, be-all, but it is useful to be able to compare apples to apples across students and be able to identify commonalities and things that they can, that the school can improve upon, or the teacher can improve upon to help a student grow. The other way that it's effective is because it's consistent across a broader area is that it can be an effective measure for success in terms of funding. So if you're trying to advocate for funding, it is a way to say, okay, compared to the rest of Alaska, this is how we're doing. And if we can drill down and say, we've seen these improvements after, you know, being able to implement these programs because we had funding for them, then that all circles back. And it's a way, it's just another way to show that we were effectively using dollars and that we're actually doing what we're supposed to do with our education. So I have a hard time a little bit with standardized testing because I know it's not, some students really struggle with tests and they struggle with scores and they struggle with sort of that competitive keeping up with the Joneses sort of thing. But I think they can be useful as long as they're used in a way that is to promote growth and not in site competition. And I don't know enough about it to say what we're doing now is the most effective way to measure students' progress. Like Paul, I defer to the experts on that, and I'm open if folks have concerns or other ideas or what might be effective, absolutely. But I think we do need some way to be able to compare ourselves to the rest of the state and also to help students track their progress through the school year. So
thank you, Courtney. So this next question is about childcare and early childhood education. Last night we held our assembly candidate forum, and I think the most listener questions we received were about that issue. The district established in 2024 a tuition-based preschool, and that program has been successful. It was expanded this fall. Is there more that the Sitka School District can do to support early childhood education in Sitka or childcare? And what are your ideas? And this will go to Courtney first.
Well, I could talk about daycare all day long, so I don't know how long we're here. So I have had, because we're foster parents, we've had, I think, 6 children that have been reliant upon childcare, early childcare in this community, which is an insane number. And the fact that we have been able to make it work is amazing. So there is a bottleneck. That bottleneck is not necessarily in preschool. Like, I appreciate that the school district has implemented that preschool. And I think that the more children that attend preschool, the more prepared they will be for kindergarten. And so I'm super supportive of that. I think in terms of supporting our community, we need additional spots in infant and toddler care. And I think that would also help with recruitment and retention of district employees. And I think that the school district is doing quite a bit in terms of having that preschool going. I know that the preschool undercuts price-wise all the private providers in town because the district is able to subsidize facility costs, right? So like childcare, the biggest cost is you've got fixed costs you've got salaries, but you've also got building costs. And being able to do that, they've been able to do it cheaper, which is great because it's not affordable for most folks. And so I think people that maybe couldn't afford preschool before now maybe can, that are maybe just above the cutoff for help from the state. So I think that's a good thing, but I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that private providers could also use help and that we should, and the district, be advocates to the assembly to try and improve those early slots as well, because those are the same children that are feeding into preschool and then ultimately above. And so I think that will improve the community, and I think that would improve employee lives. I know it's been important in our lives. We wouldn't be here if we weren't able to make it happen. So it's definitely a big deal. And I don't know how much more we should do, to be honest. I don't think there's a district role in early childhood care and toddler and infant care. I think one thing we could do would be to, if there's unused district space, we could lease that to private providers at a low cost in order to help them with some, if they're barely making ends meet. That would be a benefit to private providers. There could be a partnership there. If there was a way to somehow partner with private providers to help with insurance or benefits for employees, like one of the biggest issues that private providers have is that they cannot recruit and retain employees to be able to, take on as many children as they possibly could. And part of that is because there's just no money there to provide any additional benefits and or a decent salary. And so maybe there's something that the city could do or some way to partner with them to help lower their costs, whether it's maybe we discount their utility rates. Things that the district isn't doing, but things that we could advocate for from the assembly or from even, companies within the community, places like Search and the Coast Guard, who have a lot of families that need childcare. Are there ways that they could step up and help alleviate some of that burden? I'm just rambling at this point, so I'll pass it over to Paul.
No, I don't think that, I think you covered completely everything. I don't even think there's anything I can add to that. I mean, I guess the only thing that I would say is, as I was listening to Courtney talk about that, and I agree with Courtney's surmisal, I hesitate to have the district especially go below the pre-K. I'm not sure what the legality and appropriateness of that is, but I also agree that the district is a stakeholder in the community. And as Courtney pointed out, when we have a lack of services, we as a stakeholder in that, it affects us. I can see possibly, maybe asking the assembly to be can we form a coalition or whatever that's specifically about daycare or young worker retention, family, something like that. And then, maybe the district can provide one of our administrators or maybe an administrator and a board member or something could sit on that committee so that the needs are understood and the needs from the district side are communicated. So I think that's a great idea.
We've got the Early Childhood Coalition in town. I don't know if the school board or the school district has been involved with them at all. My husband has done some work with them, and they only tangentially know things about it. But that would be a place that we could link up. And I know they've provided some recommendations to the assembly, so it's really, I think, on the community and on the board and on the employees in the district to say, hey, they've provided quite a few recommendations. Let's act on these. Let's get these done. What is it going to take? So, yeah.
You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka School Board Candidate Forum. You can call in now, 747-5879, just about 20 minutes left to ask your questions of the school board candidates. This next one is a question I posed to us. We posed to assembly candidates in the questionnaire, and I didn't pose it to school board candidates, but maybe I should have because this proposition has probably the potential to mostly impact students, which is Prop 1. The Sitka Community Hospital Dedicated Fund pays a retirement liability for employees of the former hospital. It also takes in around $800,000 a year in tobacco tax money, and Prop 1 would update city code, expanding what money from that fund could pay for to include bond debt and capital expenditures associated with athletic and recreational facilities, i.e. an updated or potentially new recreational facility that I think the school district isn't mentioned in the proposition, but in theory would be accessible to students, or it's fuzzy what that's going to look like, and it's a long ways off. But I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on Prop 1. Are you in favor of it or unsure? What's your perspective on Prop 1? And this will go to Paul first.
Thanks. Well, I don't know the financial details, so I hesitate to speak to that. However, I will applaud the idea of, for every facility we own, you talked about a dedicated fund for facilities maintenance. you know, that really used to be the way the district ran when things were, you know, the tide was a little higher, as I might say. There was a little bit more funds. And, you know, there should be a facility plan, and which has an age out, and you know, there's a plan for replacing the roof and when the windows need to be done and when the heating system needs to be updated and all those sorts of things. And I applaud that, because I think that in the long run, not only do you have a better environment to live and learn and work in, you know, we've sort of defaulted, not in all cases, but in many cases, it feels like, you know, we have a lot of deferred maintenance, and then it's, you know, we're replacing things when they fail. And I know we have some great hardworking staff. You know, the maintenance departments have sort of merged in the last couple of years, and the city's been fantastic about, you know, trying to support the district in every possible way that they can. And, you know, so I know they're doing a great job, and I know that they, you know, I think that I'm sure there's been some growing pains with, you know, moving an entire department from kind of one entity to another. I don't know the details behind that, but, you know, and I would be interested in seeing what the maintenance staff, what they're going to come back and say. I think that a lot of times we forget to ask the folks, be like, well, you guys are really the experts at the, you know, what are we looking at? How would this compare with our facilities planning? So I like the idea that somebody's trying to have some longevity to their distance or to their thinking of like, okay, this is an opportunity for us to make basically what I would consider, it sounds like would be a trust. You know, we're creating a trust that would help offset some of these costs into the future. And I applaud that, but I don't know the specific details of the financials to really speak to it. So that's my 1.5 cents.
Thanks. Pass it to Courtney.
Yeah, and I'm not super familiar with it either, but I do have a question for Paul. So does this school district right now have a maintenance plan?
Yeah, I'm sure there's some plans out. Yes. And then, and that gets tied into, so a lot of the capital improvement projects, though, are generally in the past have been funded from the state. So there's like a waiting list. And so you have to like, basically it's like writing a grant for what you need to replace. So, you know, let's say it's the, you know, the covered area at Key Gushaheen, I can think of, has been on the list for, you know, probably since my son that got married last weekend was in kindergarten. I mean, you know, but we're in a pool that we compete with other people around the state, or not other people. I'm going to restate that. We're in competition with other districts. So, you know, the maintenance department, they have to do, so the administration and the maintenance department work together and they come up with this plan every year and we submit our requests to the state and then the state scores them in certain ways. I don't understand the entire system. But yeah, no, there's definitely plans for each of the buildings. And from time to time, the maintenance department would come in and they would talk about, I'm thinking about, oh, we had boiler issues and we've had, but then you have ones that pop up, like a few years back we had, during the sprinkler inspection at Key Gushaheen, it turned out that the entire sprinkler system needed to be, you know, overhauled, and it was a major surprise. And we don't have good maintenance sinking funds for those sorts of things, so it's kind of like a panic. And but the city's worked really hard to help where they can, and it's been a good partnership. So. And I think that's so the long and short of my comment there is I think it's a changing landscape all the time.
Yeah. In general, I'm in favor of additional funds that would help with that, because I know the easiest place to cut is always maintenance that could be put off till next year, right? And so if you're trying to salvage programs and you hope that next year will be just a little bit better, things get pushed down the line and then until you have a failure. And then all of a sudden it costs 5 times as much. And you need it done tomorrow, and you don't have the funds for it, and so it just causes chaos. So anything that would be a constant revenue stream that could help us stay on track would be great. It also would probably free up some funds for supporting other programs that the district could really use. So in general, I'm supportive of it, but that is because I'm not familiar with the possible negatives. So.
All right, this next question is related to the school's libraries. And It says book banning increased dramatically in the U.S. in recent years. From July 2023 to June 2024, the international advocacy organization PEN America recorded over 10,000 instances of book bans across the United States in 220 public school districts. What are your thoughts on book bans? If a parent called for the school board to remove a book based on its content, how would you respond as a school board member?
That's to me first.
And that's to you first, Courtney. I'm sorry.
In general, I am not in favor of book bans. I think that a contradictory point of view can be educational. And so I think that in order to fully, fully understand and have confidence in your own beliefs, you need to see the other side of the coin, so to speak, and to be introduced to other religions, other points of view. Even if you disagree, that's okay. That's room for discourse. The only place I would maybe pause with that would be like blatant hate, blatant discrimination. But I think of some of the historical texts that have not aged well, right? They have very important lessons, but they also are colored by a different time and a different culture, right? And so I think they still have value. I think of, Tom Sawyer or Huck Finn and there's a million of them where you're like, okay. There's a lot of things that in this day and age would not be deemed okay by a lot of people, but that's still, I think, valuable literature to learn from and to have discourse and say, okay, what can we talk about? So in general, I'm against them. If a parent came and said, I want this book banned or I want these types of books banned, I would probably challenge that and really ask for the reasons why, why they don't feel it, that discourse is valuable. So that's generally how I feel. I'll pass that to Paul.
Yeah, I've been a big proponent of libraries for years, and I really feel like access to materials is really a First Amendment issue in a lot of ways. I mean, I don't feel like, obviously things that are in the classroom or in the school library should be age appropriate.
Yeah, definitely.
That goes without question. And there's certainly a separate issue if folks were bringing something up that was like they wanted something banned, an item banned from curriculum versus banned from, being allowed in the school library. That would be a completely different issue. And I know this is, getting in the weeds, but I also follow this fairly, not super closely, but I do get a lot of news updates on this. And I think that there's a lot of value in being able to look at those perspectives. And I don't think that I would be rushing in any way to ban a book. I think it would be like a very last-ditch effort. It would have to be, something that had some clear and imminent danger. Yeah, I guess that's where I stand on that. Thank you.
This next question just came in from a listener from Lindsay. She asks, with the rising amount of gun violence in schools across America, what are some ideas you have to prevent gun violence from occurring in the Sitka school district? And this would go to Paul first.
I know they already do training for just this sort of situation. The staff does as it is, it's required. Making sure that we keep up on, all of our, and this kind of comes back to some of the maintenance issues, actually. Making sure that our security systems, our camera systems, our phone systems are all working and up to date. And there's certainly other, cyber attack issues and whatnot. We really need to stay out in front of that. So I think that, and that all takes time. It all takes staff time, which takes money. And so making sure that we're tracking that. But, so first and foremost is making sure that we have trained staff. And then beyond that is our systems. Making sure we have good visitor systems. I know they're updating the systems for volunteering in school. So the way it's going to look like may be changing when you come in to, spend some time in a classroom. And it's, unfortunately, it's a reality that we have to think about. And we would be remiss not to be making every effort that we can every reasonable effort. So,
Courtney?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different types of threats that warrant different reactions. So if you have a student who brings a gun to school and chooses to use it, that's, you need to make sure that staff and students have procedures in place for an active shooter situation, right? Which is unfortunate because I grew up, it was like the Cold War, and so we got under our desk because of a nuclear bomb, and now it's like school shooters. It's always something. But anyways, so they need to be trained and have procedures in place that children are aware of, that are practiced. There's also mental health screenings, and also just creating a culture of, see something, say something. I feel like very rarely do school shooters who are students not post it somewhere, right? If it's on Discord, if it's on, in a chat to someone, for an opportunity for a parent to take it seriously, even if they think it's maybe not going to materialize, to try and help children get mental health services. So there's ways for that. There's also cybersecurity, which again costs money because you should have secure systems. There's someone who, like the recent shooting at the Catholic school, there's a non-student who just selects a location and starts shooting. Like, that's, I don't know how you prepare. I know how you could prepare if that starts happening. I don't know how in Sitka, I'm trying to think how we would prevent that. You see someone walking up with a gun and you say something, obviously, but that's just one of those random things where you just have to be able to, and trust your police force to respond quickly and appropriately, and make sure that your students and staff are prepared for that active shooter situation and follow procedures. So I think there are ways to help with that, and also just to communicate with children and with students to say, hey, let's be aware of this. Keep your eyes, keep your ears, and if you have issues or if you have problems, find someone to talk to. I think mental health services are would be a big help there.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to KCAW. It's the live school board candidate forum. About 12 minutes left to get your questions in to candidates. I'm here speaking with Paul Ryu and Courtney Amundson, who are running for Sitka School Board. This next question is about DEI. How should the school district react to the climate in Washington towards diversity, equity, and inclusion policies? I'm guessing that means that's referencing threats to federal funding cuts if schools retain DEI policies or programs. So that would go to Courtney first.
Okay, that is a tough one. So we have a strong DEI. I feel like the Sitka School District is strongly focused on cultural-based education, and we promote diverse ideas, diverse cultures, and I think that should remain. There are, it is possible that we could be faced with losing funding if we continue to promote those online or promote those in our curriculum, and I think that's. I don't support cutting programs simply to follow, toe the line in order to maintain services, but we also need to maintain services, right? So it would really depend on the situation, like how much money are we talking about? What do we have to do? What would be lost if we didn't do this? And those are really, really tough choices that I think would rely on input from the community a lot to say, okay, do we cow? do we have the coffers to say, no, we're not going to do this and see you later funding? Or, what do we have to do to maintain the programs that we have in anticipation that things might change in the future, or hope that things might change in the future? So I really can't answer that well, because it would really depend on the severity of it and what the cost would be. But in general, I don't think the first solution would be to wipe all of our DEI language and curriculum and emphasis to maintain short-term federal funding.
Paul, I'll pass that to you.
Sure. This has been a tough one already, because there's been a lot of confusion and conflicting information. I will say that it seems like the state and the feds have done a pretty good job of figuring it out over time. you know, there's been sort of these broad sweep statements without a lot of specifics in some of these cases. And I mean, even coming down to, you know, emails coming from the department, the, you know, Department of Education in D.C. And then it's just been a hard landscape to navigate because it has, there hasn't been a lot of clarity. I think that, you know, until there actually is clarity, you know, I think that one, we'd be losing our minds trying to, you know, jump through all the hoops with, you know, as any particular one thing comes out, until it actually comes out as law, or, you know, and as Courtney said, with the funding that's tied to it, there's, I can definitely say that in a lot of cases, except for some special cases, the federal input into our district budget is pretty small. Like, you know, definitely the lion's share is the state. But then we run into the whole thing of the state is subsidizing their portion with with federal funds, and we're the only state that still does that. So there's a lot left to be figured out. I don't think that we should be, you know, running off the cliff with anybody else. I think that we have to, like, be slow and thoughtful and kind of and stay the course and, you know, weigh things. Because there's been a lot of, I don't want to say sensationalism, but, you know, there's been a lot of sort of high alerts. And then, you know, as things sort of play out through the different federal entities and whatnot, things have kind of, you know, mellowed out. So it's kind of a wait and see until we actually know what specifics are on anything. You know, it would be really devastating to come in and just start cutting programs left and right, and then turn out that, oh, we didn't actually have to do that. Like, that would be horrible. You know, there's a lot of fantastic programs that could possibly be affected, that, you know, really benefit a lot of the students in this community. So I would say that we just need to move forward slowly and thoughtfully and then weigh it situation by situation.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't preemptively act in the hopes that that would curry favor. I know the university has faced that, right? Like, they were told to eliminate, you know, DEI language on their website, and they did that because it was a budgetary decision. So I think it's been a bigger problem in universities, and I don't know how much that's trickled down into primary education. But I'm just hoping it doesn't, I guess.
Well, we're rounding out the hour here, so I'm going to throw you a little bit more of a fun one before we say goodbye this evening. As school board members, you're responsible for more than hiring and budgets. School board members determine the school district vision, they set priorities, and assist in achieving goals. What are your school board member superpowers, and what will be your unique contribution to the children of the Sitka School District? And that will go to Paul first.
Oof, okay. That was like a four-part question. How much is first of all, I was going to point out, the only hiring we do is the superintendent. There are one employee, so everyone else works for the superintendent. So I think that, you know, my superpowers at the table are, one, I just by random chance have experience. That goes a long ways. It takes a while to come up to speed. I don't want to deter anyone from running. I think it's a fantastic investment. But education and education funding is all super complicated, and it really takes at least a full year to kind of come up to speed on how everything works. You know, beyond that, I do a lot of the policy work, and I do work on some board development stuff statewide, and so I think I have a lot of skills for trying to help keep a board, one, communicating well with each other. I can help, you know, a great relationship with our superintendent, and then, you know, I really think that public transparency and public input's really big, and I look for every opportunity I can to make that more accessible. Whether that's, you know, changing from a really dry, stuffy testimony type situation to more of a town hall meeting so that people feel comfortable coming and sharing their thoughts, or, you know, whatever ideas that people have of, like, how can we disseminate and collect information in a way that really reflects our community. So that's where I feel a personal investment. And then I think that all of that goes, if you have a well-functioning board, you know, setting a good example, I think that trickles down. If you have a board that is, feels like they're pulling together with good, well-developed goals and ideas, you know, that the whole district, we all kind of lock arms and walk together. It's not like we're not, you know, struggling against one another, you know, trying to build up some momentum. So, yeah, I'm hoping to, I feel like I've been part of that, and I hope to continue it.
Courtney?
So my superpowers would be, I am a data-driven type of person. I like to use data to tell stories. So I think that that would be a useful skill to be able to try and pull together with the information that we have within the district to try and address policy issues that come up, be able to visualize those. I also like to take ideas and translate them into tangible action. So I feel like there's a lot of, when folks have feedback, there's a lot of these like really broad but wonderful ideas, and we need to find specific ways to move towards those goals. Like, I want schools to be all inclusive. That is a wonderful goal. What are some tangible steps that we can take to help meet that goal? And so I like to be able to work with the community members on that. I'm also really receptive, so I have a lot of opinions on things, but I none of them are set in stone, and I don't have a lot of ego attached to it. So I am always willing to hear folks' point of view, and if you disagree with me, I'm not going to take it personally. I'm not going to get angry. I'm just going to listen, and I'm going to try and learn. And I think that is a useful attribute for a board member of any kind. I also am compassionate, so I have worked with a lot of different, like I have worked with the poor, I have worked with the homeless, I have worked with children with special needs a lot, and I have a lot of compassion for students in that every path is not the same. And so I think being able to understand that those unique stories that children have do contribute to the whole. And so being able to try and understand, you know, community members and parents' concerns for their individual children and how that can translate to the broader school district is useful in terms of trying to set policy and making sure that, that everyone is getting the education that they need. So I think those would be the skills that I would bring to the table, or the attributes.
That was a great answer.
All right, final question, just a couple of minutes left. This will go to Courtney first. Why should Sitkins vote for you in the municipal election on October 7th?
I've been asked this before, and I don't know why I struggle with it so hard. Basically, I work hard, I'm smart, I can get things done. I am logic-based and generally nonpartisan, and I want to help the school board run efficiently and become better at all of its duties. So, and I want to be able to work well with other team members to do that, with other board members, with staff, and also with parents and members of the community too. So I think that voting for me is just a good way to ensure that you've got someone on the board that will advocate for you, that will listen to you, and that can help drive the policies and the objectives of the board forward.
Thank you. I'll pass it to Paul.
Yeah, thank you. I think that, you know, I'd appreciate people's votes because I think that I have the experience, and I think that people know that I've shown up and done the job, even when it hasn't been easy or pretty. And I think that, you know, I think I value the district very much, and I value the community a lot, and I really like to, you know, create that liaison between the community and the school district, and to really make people feel listened to. You know, I mean, you can't possibly, you know, you're going to get differing opinions, but more than anything, I think it's important that people feel like they have an opportunity to speak to it, so that when you go and make that decision, they know that at least you took the time to listen to what people had to say. If we just run on a, you know, if we were operating in a silo, we wouldn't really be representing the community, and that's what we're elected to do, is to represent the community. So I think that that's really important, and, you know, I pledge to, you know, keep my efforts up on that. So thank you.
Well, thank you both so much for sitting with me for the last hour and taking these listener questions and questions from me. I really appreciate your time and your service to the community. And thanks to our listeners. Thanks to the public for sending in questions. I've been speaking with school board candidates Courtney Amundson, Paul Ryu. Third candidate Lance Ewers didn't join us this evening, but you can find out more about all three school board candidates on our website at kcaw.org. If you're just tuning in or you missed last night's Assembly Candidate Forum and you'd like to go back and listen, these forums will all be posted to our website on the Raven Radio Election Center, and you can find that on our website at kcaw.org. You can also find questionnaires with the candidates, interviews, and a sample ballot and other election information. You've been listening to our Assembly Candidate, our Sitka School Board Candidate Forum on Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. I'm Catherine Rose, and Starry Night is up next with your host, Dorothy Orbison. I'll have a little bit of music for you before Dorothy comes in here.